This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in a half hour, we'll check in with our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. He joins us each and every Wednesday throughout the NFL season. Definitely want to get his perspective on something you and I talked about yesterday, Cody, which is Patrick Mahomes. What is he seeing from Mahomes from this Chiefs offense? And does he agree that it's the Chiefs and the Bills in the AFC, maybe the NFL, period, right now, the two teams that everybody should be chasing just 3 weeks into the season?
Well, the NFC's been much messier.
It has, yeah. I mean, well, just one division in particular. Just look at the NFC East. What a mess that is. You got the Eagles who and the Commanders who are 2-1. You got a Cowboys team that's fallen apart after a week one win in which everybody's like, wow, they look amazing. And then the last 2 weeks, the Cowboys have stunk it up. And then you've got the Giants who are 1-2 and nobody really thinks much of. It's a weird division. So we'll get into the entire NFL.
I like Malik Nabers.
He's the real deal. He looks like the real deal. He was incredible in their win over the Browns over the weekend. So we'll get into that with Ross Tucker. Plus, a little bit later on today, around 11:45 or so, expected to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, get a little update on maybe Kareem Hunt's status as he officially was added to the active roster, elevated from the practice squad. We kind of hinted about that yesterday, and they did cut to get Keontae Ingram, who I assume will eventually come back to the practice squad. So we'll hear from Rita Mahomes on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. But we got to start with the Royals, and oh man. Hey, a win is a win. It could never be more true than where they're at right now with now 5 games to go. Because there was nothing in the game from an offensive perspective that made you feel any better. No, nothing. In fact,
what do you mean? The one run they managed to get in 10 innings, or the twice they lead the bases loaded, or the 3 times in 5 innings they left at least 2 men on base? That,
yes. Oh, okay. There was the error in the 10th inning. A win is a win, and it was such a frustrating game to
watch. That game was pissing me off so bad. It was putting me in a bad mood last night because I felt like it was a playoff game, as I told you. And like, if that's how a playoff game would go, I mean, they had me standing up in my living room multiple times. I haven't done that for a Royals game all year, Gold, because, you know, it's just a regular season game. I wasn't trying to treat it that way. Boy, did I feel different in the 9th, 8th, 10th inning of that game where you're like actively getting frustrated. Look, at the end, I got the joy, the happiness. But I mean, yeah, the game did not go offensively the way we wanted, but I will just take the damn win.
Yeah, you have to.
I could come in here today and I could knock the way they did things offensively, and I could be like, well, that can't work for the final 5 games. But what they needed more than anything, more than they needed 10 runs in a game, was to just feel like they could win again. And I thought like 8 different times in that game they were going to lose. And then they didn't. So, okay, problem solved.
Just find a way to, basically, like, if they are kind of like playoff games, essentially survive in advance. And that's what the Royals did. And they improved their situation in a big way. They get the win. The Mariners lose. The Twins lose. So you got a 2-game lead without the tiebreaker over the Twins. You have a 2.5-game lead plus a tiebreaker over Seattle. And it's gotten really simple with the math. I mean, we can even figure this out, all jokes aside, from earlier in the year when we were talking about games above 500 and everything.
Magic number 4.
The scenarios are simple. You go 5-0 in the final 5, you're in the playoffs. You go 4-1 the rest of the way, you're in the playoffs. Jake Eisenberg just put this out. I appreciate from the Royals. They go 3-2, Minnesota would then need to go 5-0, I'm sorry. If the Royals go 2-3 in these final 5, Minnesota would have to go 4-1. If the Royals went 1-4 in these final five, Minnesota would need to go 3-2. Seattle would need to go 4-0. And if the Royals went winless, didn't win again the rest of the regular season, 0-5, the Twins would still need to go 2-3. Seattle would need to go 3-1. Much better spot today. Think about that. The Royals could
go. What a shift. Because if they had lost, those numbers look dramatically differently.
The Royals could go 2-3. The final five. And the Twins still have to go 4-1.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel a lot better. I'll say this. I'm probably personally not going to make the same mistake I made, I guess, 8 days ago when I told you the Royals are without a question in the playoffs. Do the math. And then they went on and lost 7 games in a row. And I'm like, okay, so the math's a little bit harder than what we thought before, but that at least includes it. Now, look, Jake did say that those hypotheticals don't include 3- or 4-way tie scenarios and a million other things that could still take place that I don't think will. But for the most part, the Royals are once again in control of their own destiny like they were yesterday. But now their destiny is much more clear. Yesterday, they were facing down the barrel of, for the first time in, I think, months. Had they lost that game and the Twins won, they would have no longer been in a playoff spot or controlled their own destiny. They would have been on the opposite side of this same damn conversation we're having about the other teams. And yeah, it wasn't pretty. Although I'll say, like, the easy thing to be would be to be like, I can't believe they couldn't score. They had the bases loaded with nobody out in the first. Gurriel, of course, lines out on an absolutely scorched baseball that eventually leads to a double play, and then they get out. They get a bases loaded again in the third, and Salvi throws away in a bat. Doesn't matter. Just, like, couldn't get a run. Can we, on the opposite end, talk about how impressive of a pitching performance that was from the Royals yesterday? Cole Reagans goes 6 shutout innings when they desperately need it. In comes Bubich, no problem. In comes Long, no problem. In comes Angel Zerpa, no problem. And then Lucas Damirsek, with a guy starting on second base, gets the job done. Okay, I mean, most impressive pitching performance all season from the Royals. Went to the bullpen arms they trust, and then one maybe they don't in Zerpa, and got the whole damn thing done. So that one error in Bobby Wood Jr., you know, making a guy double clutch a baseball, allows a runner to come home to get the win, fine by me. I mean, fine
for
by
sure.
me.
Honestly. And Cole Reagans, like, I know the final stat line is fine, but in general, that was not his best stuff either whatsoever.
No, he walks again, had to kind of fight through it a little.
He still ends up, though, not giving up a single run. And ultimately, I think you saw the bullpen. I think people at the time were freaking out with Zerpa getting in before Urseg or whatever. But it worked out, and there's only 5 games left. So to me, there's no reason for anybody to try to overanalyze that particular decision when it's this many games left and few games, I should say, left. But also on top of it, Cody, I think they really wanted Urseg, knowing that if it goes to extras at that point, there's already the ghost runner there or the runner on second. And so
he can get the strikeout to strand a guy.
Yeah, we have seen there's very few guys that you can trust in the bullpen anyway, but let alone when there's already a runner on to get out of a jam, because you're already kind of creating yourself a jam by having a runner on second with nobody out as we get an extra inning. So it wasn't pretty, but damn it, a win is a win, man. A win is a win, and they are sitting in a much better spot. And listen to Bobby Wood Jr. with Joel Goldberg last night on Bally. I thought this was terrific. And you know a player's locked in to begin with during this stretch. But I'm talking about the game is over. It'd be very easy for Bobby to automatically just be loose in the postgame. You want to talk about a player that is locked in. His whole entire postgame interview,
he's man only cares about winning.
Locked in. You know, Joel was trying to ask him about, like, MVP stuff. And just listen to Bobby, how locked in he was last night after the win.
Yeah, pitching staff, bullpen, they kept us in this game. We're grinding out there at the plate. This is the start of something special right here, right now, and we're just going to build off this and keep going forward.
It's not for lack of effort. Maybe sometimes human nature, you just try a little bit too hard too. How did you keep on grinding, not just over the last week, but tonight? Big opportunity in the first inning. It didn't work out. How are you guys able to keep pushing?
We're just trying to just go out there and just play the game. You know, we're not trying to, we can't play to lose. We can't try to play to win. We just got to go out there and play the game and enjoy every moment of it. And just really just, like you said, grind it out. And so we were in a little skid there, but one of these games like this is something special. So this is what we're going to try to keep doing. Keep build off this, celebrate it, enjoy it, and then move on to tomorrow.
We're on the road. There were MVP chants going in the midst of the hearts pounding. This feels like playoff baseball. What do you think?
Yeah, it's the start of something special. Like I said earlier, just we needed this, and we're going to enjoy it and then focus on tomorrow.
There go the MVP chance. Before we let you go, you're so locked in. All these guys are locked in. What can you say about this group? It seems like every time you've had adversity, you've been able to bounce back.
Yeah, we got a special group in there, and a lot of people are out there doubting us that we shouldn't be in this situation, and so we didn't come this far just to come this far. We're going to keep competing and keep enjoying these moments like this.
Yeah, you knew that line was going to stick the minute he said it. We didn't come this far just to come this far. And I know our friends over at Ray Gun already have a T-shirt out this morning.
Yeah, so I might have sent them a text last night. I said, look, I'd like this T-shirt, and can you make it so that I can have it?
Yeah, they won't be the only ones, I don't think, with that T-shirt. That's one of those things that's going to stick. Especially if
we didn't come this far just to come this far is a pretty badass thing to say when your team's barreling towards the playoffs when nobody thought you had a chance to do it this year. The difference in attitude from how we had to walk in yesterday to talk about the Royals versus today, Gold, infinitely better. But Bobby Wood Jr. is a huge reason. Part of the reason they were willing to pay Bobby, but also we have to thank Bobby for why we're here is not just his play. I think the reason why they went out and spent money and made a point to win this year is because they couldn't look hollow on their promise immediately to Bobby Witt Jr., a player who they told, we're going to pay you all this money. We know the most important thing on the planet to you is winning. Bobby, I swear to you, we're going to win. And so they went after Waka. They went after Lugo. They went after players to prove to Bobby they were serious about it and immediately are proving results. They were one of the few teams, honest to God, there might have been five teams in all of baseball, who actively, seemingly went after the offseason like they were trying to significantly improve their team. And so the results are paying off. I sure hope. Please, 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 please just get another win tonight so that we can like really take the sweat off. We don't even have to think about it, Gold. I don't need like a loss tonight and then a Twins win tomorrow and then tonight. And I'm like, and now we're kind of back where we were. I don't need that stress.
It would make things a lot less stressful. But I'm with you. I mean, before Bobby got the contract extension, we were talking last November, December, January, whenever, about how the offseason could go and would it get a deal done. You know, I think we had JJ on at one point in February, maybe, or whatever, prior to the deal getting done, prior to the Super Bowl when it ultimately got done. And there were progress with talks and they were confident where things were going. But we said, hey, as much as it is about the Royals getting to the right dollar amount, which they did clearly, but also, yeah, they have to sell to Bobby Wood Jr. why he should sign with them, that he should be able to trust them to build out a winner. I'm with you that their moves in the offseason obviously show that that was the case. And that's why we were saying just a day or so ago, like, this would be really, really sad, frankly, if this team would not get to the postseason after the year they've had, because they have pushed all the right buttons to get
correct.
There. The performance has been good enough for, I would say, 95% of the season to get there. And that 7-game losing streak that is now over, thank goodness, was looking like if that ball is not foul last night.
Oh, how did you feel for those 2.5 seconds that
Joey Gallo
made contact with that ball? Oh my God. Heart sunk.
I definitely let out an oh bleep when I saw that. I mean, what, 5 feet to the left, if that? Mm-hmm. It's a home run, and we're talking about them losing 8 in a row. And I'll be honest, if that would have happened, unfortunately it didn't, but if that would have happened, I probably would have said, oh, they're toast. They're done. I don't know how you come back from that.
You already lost 7 in a row, and then Gallo puts that thing into the stratosphere.
That thing is foul, and we know with Gallo, it's either a home run or it's a strikeout, and you got the strikeout.
I mean, the feeling when that sound hit the ball, and I was like, oh, no. You're just like, oh, God, please don't do this. I can't
take it. That was going to be such a disgusting way to end it.
Dude, for Joey Gallo to come in and pinch hit. And the broadcast almost felt like they were setting it up for that, because he's like, ooh, straight. Like Ryan Lefevre was like, ooh, man, 2 straight changeups. Don't miss one of those. Mm-hmm. Well, not to this guy.
Everybody knows what Gallo is. I mean, he's got massive power, but he also will strike out like crazy.
I'll be honest. It would have killed me. And it might have sent me to just like, I can't believe it. Because that is the most, I think that's the most into every single pitch I've watched a game all year, which is common, right? When you're talking about, you and I said that was a playoff game going into it. It felt that way. Every single second when they'd leave a guy on base or they'd strand a guy for the Nationals, I'm like, oh God, please just find some way. Just find some way. And they did it. So we can take a collective breath at least for now.
No question. No question about that. I'm sure everybody in KC, if you were locked in the game, you slept a little bit better. My guess is the team slept a little bit better last night as well in the nation's capital, and they're back at it tonight. And hopefully, like maybe there is still a chance, believe it or not, to also actually have some momentum even getting into the postseason too. Like the first task is getting in, but there is still a chance with five to go and after winning last night that all of a sudden you could find a way where we're sitting here on Monday on a positive end and be like, wow, you know what? They got a little momentum just like that. It's amazing how quickly baseball can change. So,
oh my God, I feel good about them.
For that to happen, it requires them to handle business again tonight. Coming up in 15 minutes, Ross Tucker going to join us. We'll talk some NFL, get his thoughts on what he saw from the Chiefs in week three and why this offense, in particular Patrick Mahomes, is still not quite right despite being 3-0. When we woke up this morning, we weren't planning on talking college football in the second segment of the show, I'll be honest, but this has become a huge story in the last hour and a half or so, and it has, I think, major ramifications because it's something that could happen to any of the three local schools as well. This could happen to K-State, it could happen to KU, it could happen to Missouri, and that is the UNLV quarterback, who, by the way, just beat Kansas. We all saw that, right, last Friday night in Kansas City, Kansas, at Children's Mercy Park. So Matthew Itsluka, right?
Yep.
He is a quarterback at UNLV. He put out a message this morning on his own social media and says he has opted out.
He's decided to redshirt himself.
Quote, I committed to UNLV based on certain representations that were made to me, which were not upheld after I enrolled. Despite discussions, it became clear that these commitments would not be fulfilled in the future. I wish my teammates the best of luck this season and hope for the continued success of the program. Now, remember, UNLV is undefeated. They're top 25. Yeah. They are
They're
one of the favorites
to make the playoff right now.
Yeah, one of the favorites or the favorite out of the group of five to make the playoffs. So that in its own right is pretty jarring news. Now, before we even get into the nitty gritty, I think we can all agree at the top, there is definitely one angle that I think leads you down a certain path and another a different path. What I'm saying is there are conflicting reports out there right now. One report, one from the player directly, and then also
and his dad Pete, and his Pete Thamel
and his brother
and his brother, but also Pete Thamel, right? Which is not just some random college reporter
and or his dad,
right? But just for those that are like, of course his dad's going to support his son, but so you have Pete Thamel who talked to the agent of this player that said he was promised $100,000, okay, and that he did not get said money. That's what they're saying, and that's his reason. Then you have another report from a 24/7 sports reporter who is a legit account, legit reporter. I'm not trying to discredit him at all. I don't know who's telling the truth. His source, it's pretty obvious, is UNLV program directly, okay? Because he's
probably
close,
Barry Odom directly.
He's close personal friends with Barry Odom. They have ties from his Mizzou days. I'm not saying anybody's lying. I'm just telling you, let's remember, what Pete Thamel's source is the agent, so the player's side. The reporter that's saying UNLV did nothing wrong and the kid asked for more money all of a sudden. That's the school side. I don't know who's telling the truth. And I think that is a huge distinction here, though, right? If it's true that the kid, after winning a couple football games, went back to UNLV and said, hey, I want some more money, and then didn't get it and then quit. Yeah, I mean, that's the kid, adult, I guess, should be criticized. And it's like, hey, man, you made a commitment. You're asking for more money. They didn't give it to you. Now you're just quitting on your team. That's messed up. That's how I would take it. But on the other side, if it's true that he was promised $100,000 in NIL, and by the way, we are in the NIL era. So for those that are going to text in and say, well, he gets a scholarship. He does, but it's not just about that. It's not only part of his pay.
It's not even close to enough. Scholarship.
That is not what it's about.
It's not close.
Fair or not. In college football now, if it's true he was promised $100,000, man, and he didn't get it, and it's true and he got $3,000 of it, then I do not have a problem with him standing on his own business, because it is a business. We say this all the time about college programs. It's a business for him as well. Cody, if you and I and all three of us are promised a certain salary but also 10% commission, and all of a sudden 3 months into employment they say, oh, by the way, yeah, we're not paying you the commission, I don't know about you, I'm looking for another job, I'm leaving.
Yeah, so, and it's pretending like you wouldn't do it as an adult makes no sense to me. Pretending like this is how you wouldn't treat your job. But people constantly try to treat sports like they're not a real job, right? That's not how it works, that you don't have leverage, because some parts aren't true, right? I can't, like Chris Jones, like if I want to make more money, it's pretty hard for me to be like, well, I'm sitting out the first week of Chief seasons of radio shows until you pay me more money. I won't sign that franchise tender until you give me a long-term contract to stay at 96.5 The Fan. So some parts of it do not operate like normal business. But the idea that you were promised money, hypothetically, and then not paid that money, if that's how it went down, I don't blame him.
But he shouldn't have even played to start the season then.
Why? He thought he might get the money.
Yeah,
here's what I honestly think's happened. I think he thought he'd get the money. He started playing well, and this is why Barry Odom claims he's asking for more money. He went into his office, and he says, where's the check? I'm owed this money. You told me I'd make this money, and then it hit a breaking point where you're like, if you're not going to pay me, then I'm not going to work here anymore.
There's a report from Adam Rittenberg of ESPN that said his dad, Bob Sluga, said there was an NIL deal agreed to in February. He should have said something before. Why is it now? And I don't...
Because he still had a relationship and maybe trusted the coaching staff at university that they were going to fulfill their verbal obligation.
And yes, I know it's not... How did it not come up at least at one point in July?
Who said it didn't come up? Who said he hasn't been asking for this check? According to his dad, he has been asking for the check.
Then what,
4 months.
Then what did it take for him to... to now quit
realizing that they weren't
going to
come through?
Yeah. Because to me, it... He doesn't... The reason why he's...
They stopped dangling the carrot and told him that it was just a stick.
He screws the team over, obviously, but forget the team because it doesn't matter. He deserves to get his money, and he will.
I don't know if he's ever getting his money.
but he screws over himself, I think, because if you think of from a business standpoint, he can make forget what he's asking for now or whatever he agreed to. If he is the quarterback of the first group of five team to be in the college football playoff, they go into it. He's a major storyline. The dude shoots a basketball to warm up his wrist before the game. It's a huge storyline. He is a Cinderella story, and he's going to make a ton more money if they're in the college football playoff. But to do it now, I don't get why he would do it now. I get that the team screwed you over, and that's fine. You can transfer at the end. There's a report that came out last night, actually, that he was offered more money from another school. So that's the other angle of this whole thing.
That also reportedly came from UNLV source, so we don't know who to believe on any side here.
Yeah, she's a Fox Sports reporter.
I'm not saying the reporter's lying. I'm saying that we have to remember on both sides of the story, pro player side, pro college side, where the source is coming from. This happens in the NFL all the time, right? Like when there's a dispute, if the source is the agent or the source is coming from the team, there's...
Just take it with a grain of salt.
That's all I'm saying.
Sure, but it tracks that. Because it happens all the time. It happens
everywhere.
The
other thing tracks, too, that maybe the school's not paying. You know what I mean? Like, it's both sides.
Sure. But I think that he doesn't have any... He doesn't have the room... He would be better off to me saying, hey, you guys screwed me over, and making it known, playing...
Is that better?
Yes. Because, Cody, right now, I don't think anybody looking... Unless you are desperate... Why would you bring him in compared to any kid who is just as good?
This is where I think you're wrong.
Because to me, as soon as something happens that he doesn't like, it sounds like to me he's done and he's out. And I get that he deserves the money and he should get the money. But why would any big-time program take a flyer on this kid compared to somebody else who they know hopefully won't quit midseason because there's NIL deals that fall through, I'm sure,
yep,
more often than we think, and right, we don't hear this story.
Right, for once a player is standing on his own side and stand up for his own business.
Sacrificing what he could make. To me, it's a bet.
And he's willing to make that sacrifice, so what do we care? He's willing to take that risk. This is Kirk Cousins betting on himself. Why do I care if he wants to take the risk with his own money to earn more money?
But he's not betting on himself when he's not playing. You are paid to play. These guys are paid to play football. He's not playing football.
And he's not getting paid, reportedly. Possibly. Right?
But to him, what makes him think that it's going to change by him being the guy?
He doesn't think it's changing for him, but I think there's a chance that he believes this could cause change in college football.
So he's willing
perhaps
to sacrifice his career and potentially for him, millions of dollars.
And by the way, there weren't
for
like
other people.
Millions? He was never getting millions of dollars.
Yeah, he's fighting over 100,000.
If he is the quarterback of a team that makes the college football playoff, you would be surprised how much money a school like Auburn would throw at a kid.
He's a senior. To be a grad transfer senior. He's still a 50% completion guy. People can't tell me that both he stinks as a quarterback and nobody will ever target him ever. No one will touch this guy with a 10-foot pole. He stinks so bad. No program would ever want him. But if he made one college football playoff, he'd be at Auburn? Well, then somebody else will take him. Someone else will take him next year as their starting quarterback. Might not be Auburn. Might be another group of five school, but they might pay him the $100,000 they promised him.
Yeah, that was kind of, I'm glad you said that, because that was the only thing. And I'm not sure. I'm not saying you're saying this, but, and this is where I'm skeptical on reports from both sides, by
right,
the way.
We don't know what's going on. We actually don't know.
None of us know truly what was agreed to. And yeah, I know there's a lot of people saying, hey, get it in writing. Well, this is where I think we would all agree. This would be a lot simpler if we did have contracts involving the student athlete and
That's what opens up.
So that is part of the solution long term. But I do think, to Cody's point a little bit, one report saying that he was tampered with in the middle of the season to transfer. Okay, maybe that's true. Okay,
potentially.
But does it track if then you or others are telling me that his stats suck and he's not that good? And then and then 5 minutes later, we're saying if he plays out the season, he's going to go get $1 million from somebody. That all cannot be true.
If he plays out the season, though, and he's the quarterback of a team that's in the college football playoff, your NIL value is going to rise, where maybe he does actually hit that threshold to be paid $1 million, because he is, who knows what endorsements he's going to get, because he's the guy, he's the face, he's the, all the stories. We see stuff change so quickly. People become the Cinderella story. They love that stuff. Yeah, I think it fits.
We're asking him to put a lot of more faith in the system then. Because again, I'll just go with the real life example that we all have.
He's not betting on himself, though.
We're not. Look, we are fortunate enough to do what we do for a living. But also in college football, there's only so many starting quarterback jobs. So I'm not gonna try to make a direct comparison to everybody. But I still think it is not that much different. Then whatever you're listening right now, whatever you do for a living, whether it's a career you just started or a career you've been in for 30 years, if you had an employer, like, I'll use personal example. We were talking about this in the bullpen before the show. Like I have had not to this extent of money by any means, but I had a freelance gig. I won't even mention who it was with many, many years ago in the broadcast industry. And it was a per game basis deal I was doing, Drew. And okay. 4 games in, not even no joke, it was 4 games also. 4 games in, I'll say I was it was just a public address announcer. I wasn't making any money, okay? But it was still something I was supposed to get paid for. 4 games in, I did not get paid. Myself and others for this what turned out to be a shady minor league football team in town did not pay any of us. We all said, all right, well, we're not operating the game. Sure. I'm not doing play-by-play for the game. I kid you, this is just a true story. And the game was like 20 minutes away from starting. I was supposed to start doing the PA announcements. I said, I'm not doing that. You guys haven't paid me. And I could tell this league was not going to be around the next year. By the way, the team the next year folded.
Yeah.
They paid me 10 minutes before via PayPal. I said, all right, let's roll. And I did it. So that's a much smaller scale example. But my point is, at some point, man, if someone's going to break a promise, verbal or not, to you, you have to make a decision. Are you going to stand up and say, you know what? I'm not letting them F me over. I'm going to stand up. I have leverage in this case. You can say like he does. I don't know how you can tell me he doesn't have any leverage. His leverage is what he just did. I won't play.
Because if he transfers.
But Drew, if he played out the entire year, wouldn't his eligibility be gone? Isn't your whole plan ruined?
He's a senior. If he plays out his entire year at
UNLV, he can't go to another school after making his NIL money. This is his only chance to make it.
We're going to talk more about this throughout the show. We got 15 seconds, man.
To me, it looks way worse then. If he's quitting midseason because he's not, to me, You look like a bad team member, because UNLV should pay him, and they should be forced to pay him. But if you're
did Jamar Chase look like a bad teammate for not showing up to camp? Did Chris Jones?
He has right, 2 years left on his contract. He's in a contract.
Those are a little bit different. But I promise you, we're going to get to this again. I promise. Up next, though, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, is going to join us. We're going to talk to him about the Chiefs' Week 3 performance. What is he seeing from Patrick Mahomes? Is he noticing the footwork as well? What is it? We break that down.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join MIDI. Cody.com.
And with him next. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon. We're expecting to have Ross Tucker join us in just a few minutes, trying to connect with him. Obviously, a lot of text coming in on the NIL topic and the news out of UNLV.
I looked it up, and like what I was saying about, like, I think part of the issue with like Drew's plan of just play out the season and then get paid, or why did he wait this long to hold him to the amount of money he was paid, is had he played one more game, well, then he's never getting that $100,000 from UNLV, and he wouldn't have a chance to earn it next year because he wouldn't have had the redshirt year available. So had you made him wait out an entire year, no money, no money. And they just told you they're not going to pay you.
This is the exact scenario that has been created by the NCAA for many, many years, not having a true system in place. And it's allowed NIL to, on one hand, maybe in some cases, have a player middle of the season go ask for more money and kind of leverage the coach. Or in other cases, maybe what's happening here, we don't know for sure, at UNLV, where a player was promised something and they didn't get their private, you know, prior commitment from the university in middle of the season. Here we are. So it's a disaster. It was preventable. And maybe this is what causes some sort of change. But we'll get back to what's going on at UNLV and NIL and something that could happen with any of the local schools here, with KU, K-State, or Missouri. But let's talk some NFL. We go out to the hotline. Welcome in our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Our insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. And Ross, we could probably talk to you about this as well. You cover a ton of college football, I know, especially in the Mountain West as well. So you've probably seen this kid play, or at least have watched UNLV quite a bit as well. Real quick, before we get to NFL, I don't know if you're familiar with the story this morning or not, but what's your kind of opinion, if you have any at all?
Yeah, I got a lot to say on this, actually. You came to the right guy, because I think I called Spluka's fourth game ever, maybe, when he was a true freshman at Holy Cross in the Patriot League Championship game.
Oh, wow.
And then I definitely called his game against Army last year, but I've been following him since that game in the spring of 2001, which is when the FCS played after COVID. So I don't know if you guys have seen the latest, but you can kind of tell this based on his social posts. But his dad has said that he was promised $100,000 and all he got was $3,000 to move from Holy Cross to UNLV, and that they've said multiple times, you know, throughout the spring, the summer, like, where's the money? Where's the money? Hasn't gotten it. All he's done is lead them to, by far, the best start in school history, right? I mean, they're 3-0. They beat two Big 12 teams, including KU, on the road. Like, that never happens for UNLV football, ever. They're ranked for the first time ever. They actually have the best chance of anyone of making the playoffs right now from the non-Power 4 leagues. And I don't know, I'm sure, I have no idea what UNLV would say about this, right? What I would tell you guys, I've watched him play a lot. He is not an NFL quarterback. He does not throw it well enough to play in the NFL. He's a terrific runner. He's incredibly hard-nosed, and, you know, they've been running him like 10 to 15 times a game, including a bunch against Kansas a couple weeks ago. You know, he probably really, realistically, this is his last year of eligibility to really get any kind of money. And I think he would have been happy. His dad said he would have been happy to stay at UNLV and finish out this year if he got the $100,000, but he didn't. And to me, I mean, first of all, we could have a whole discussion about being offered the money and not getting it, because I hear that that's happening more and more in college football. And, you know, this just happens to be a young man who is willing to take a stand and do something. Now, most guys, most of these kids aren't willing to do anything about it. He is. And so, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks, I mean, the UNLV quarterback from last year went to USC for $600,000. I know the Colorado State quarterback got offered $600,000. Luca, I would tell you, probably worth at least like $500,000 to a Power 4 school. So if you were my son, in particular, if UNLV is not paying, you know, fulfilling their obligation, But just in general, if he's not going to be an NFL player, and he's not certainly not a quarterback, you know, he's got one more year to try to capitalize on that. And if UNLV is not even going to give him the 100 that honestly he's already earned with just these three games, then I don't blame him at all.
Yeah,
because he'll get $500,000 plus from some other SEC or whatever school this offseason to play next year in his final year of eligibility. So honestly, guys, the whole thing just makes me really, really sad. Like, I'm incredibly sad for him. He moves to Vegas. He, you know, he's playing in these big games and TV and they're winning, but he's not getting what he was promised. I'm so sad for the UNLV teammates. I mean, think about how excited they are about their season and where they are and what can happen and the possibilities. You know, UNLV fans, I guess, to a lesser extent, but really sad for the young man, his family, his teammates, because they had such a promising season going. You got to know that this was the last resort. He absolutely did not want to do this. Felt like he had to. And what's really crazy, you guys know, because he was at Mizzou, is, yeah, I guess, I mean, with now it's such a bad look for UNLV, and that coach Odom is such a good coach and seems poised to get a really big job this offseason. I'm fascinated by the whole thing. I'm sad by the whole thing, because you'd think from somebody at UNLV's perspective, they would have been much better off just giving them the other $97,000 if they have this magical year, keep going, and they don't get all the negative publicity that's now going to come their way.
When you look at what the Chiefs are doing, let's switch back over to the NFL side, Ross. Obviously, the big conversation is they're 3-0, even though I don't think they're playing their best football. I don't think most people would say they're playing a particularly fun or interesting brand of offensive football. Are you actually concerned about the Chiefs' offense or their inability to get a deep passing game? Or is this just one of those, if you're on the Chiefs team, you're like, I don't care, we're 3-0. We'll figure out the rest of it later.
I think there's a little bit of both of those things. You know, it's so funny because you guys know, you know, I do these radio hits on stations all over the country. It's hilarious after the Ravens game, after the Bengals game, after the Falcons game. All these cities, they're like, you know what? We were right there with the Chiefs. This is like a real positive. You know, we were right there. We were a play or two away. I mean, the Chiefs have become the team that even when they beat the other team, when they didn't play their best, the other teams are, like, happy that they were in a game with them. I mean, think about that for a second. Like, that is, this is the NFL. That is nuts. Every week they're like, you know what, though? That's a good sign for us moving forward. Oh, really? Because the Bengals just lost at home to the Commanders. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, is it really a good sign? I'm not sure it is. So I think from a Chiefs perspective, I would be highly encouraged that it doesn't feel like they're playing nearly their best, and yet they're still winning. There's a lot of room for improvement, and if they keep improving, then they'll clearly be the class of the NFL. I wrote last week, I think they have the best chance of any team to three-peat in my lifetime. Now, obviously, there's not that many opportunities for it, but their division's not very good. Their conference, even, I'm skeptical of their conference. I think the Bills have gotten off to a much better start than I was expecting. So it's pretty wild when you think about it, just to think where we are at now. I mean, and now, like, the big thing is, like, Travis Kelce. I mean, this is what we're worried about. They're not winning by enough, or that even when they're winning, Travis Kelce isn't getting enough yards or touchdowns. I mean, you guys have some champagne problems out there.
No question, Ross. As we're talking to Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store. So the tight end position, that's one thing, Travis Kelce. Then we now know the left tackle has been the other part of the conversation. We've asked you two straight weeks in a row. Now it looks like Wanya Morris for sure is going to be the left tackle unless he gets hurt, basically, at this point in time. Did you have a chance to take a look at what you saw from Wanya, and do you believe that now watching it, it was clearly the right decision to switch away from Kingsley?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. Wanya looked more comfortable. And I think especially Kingsley seemed like he had lost his confidence. And that's a bad, bad deal as an offensive lineman. I've been there when you lose your confidence. When you lose your confidence, guys, you stop trusting your technique. And then you're really in trouble, right? Then you're all out of whack. Things compound themselves. You know, I think he still has a chance to be a good player, but he's got to get to a point where he gets that confidence back. You almost have to be like a corner where you're going against some good players like Hendrickson or whoever. You're going to get beat every once in a while, but you can't get beat. We always used to say you can have a bad play. You can't have a bad day. Felt like Kingsley was starting to let, you know, a bad play turn into a bad day, and that's not okay. And then it was affecting his technique, and he starts questioning what he's doing. And yeah, I think they're in a better place with Wanya for the foreseeable future.
You had mentioned the Bills in a previous answer. Do you think it's just Chiefs and Bills as the class of the AFC right now? Do you want to include the Texans, Jets? I mean, maybe you're a big Steelers guy. I don't want to. I mean, you are a Pittsburgh guy, so I don't want you to rule them out either.
Whoa.
He's a Philly guy.
He's a Philly guy. Pennsylvania guy. My bad, you're an Eagles guy. I was getting the states mixed up. I was just thinking like
the PA guy.
Okay, so you can bag like on the Steelers.
We don't like those Westsiders, all right? No, I'm kidding. It's fun. You know, it's really funny because I grew up an hour west of Philly, and it's 100% Eagles. Now I live an hour further west of that, like in the state capital, which is Harrisburg, or people know Hershey Chocolate or whatever. And it's like 50-50. It's just wild how like that the 1 hour makes that much of a difference. So I got no beef with the Steelers. In fact, I'm just incredibly impressed. They actually remind me a little bit this year of the Chiefs. Both the Chiefs and the Steelers, every game they play is the exact same game. I mean, the Chiefs, every game it's like, oh, it's going both ways. Oh, no, they won again. You know what I mean? and the Steelers, it's like every game is 13-10, and somehow they win at the end. I don't really, you know, the Steelers have got to play better than this offensively for me to think that they're a legitimate contender against the Chiefs. I do think that the Texans and the Jets have enough that they could give, you know, they could certainly give the Chiefs a really good game. But so far, it's definitely been the Bills. I mean, I'm really surprised. You know, guys, they lost from, like, the core Bills team that have played against the Chiefs in the playoffs in recent years. They have lost their starting center, Mitch Morse, both starting receivers, Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs, both starting safeties, Poyer and Hyde. They're starting Tre'Davious White. None of those guys are on the team anymore. And then of the guys that still were on the team, they don't have their three best defensive players. Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, Taron Johnson, all at the second level. And they're killing teams. Second straight Bills game I did on the radio where the fourth quarter, they had their backups in like it was a preseason game. I mean, they're murdering these teams right now. Josh Allen, two games in a row, has not even had a turnover-worthy play. It feels like he's kind of figured it out. So right now, I think you can make a strong argument that the Buffalo Bills are the best team in ball.
Lastly for you, Ross, we saw Jaden Daniels there on Monday Night Football. It seems like that was the start of the Jaden Daniels era. That one throw in particular, Terry McLaurin at the very end, was big time. That was a legit elite NFL throw. Do you think, I know it's three games in, are you now buying in more than maybe you were before, if depending on how you viewed him before the season? How can you not?
So I was already really high on Jaden Daniels. And the thing that was so interesting to me about it, you guys know I do the daily Ross Tucker football podcast. And I'm telling you, February, March, April, okay, I think every guy I had on my show, Greg Cosell, Chase Daniel, Phil Sims, Sean King, Emory Hunt, like all of these former NFL quarterbacks or quarterback gurus or whatever, they all either said they liked Jaden Daniels more than Caleb Williams, or they intimated as much in the conversation. So to me, this is not just like a three-game sample size, right? This is not, which by the way, it's the only sample size we have, but it's just how I felt about him. And I'm not one of those guys that like watches all his college tape and pretends I'm a quarterback guru or whatever. It's really just based on, you know, what the experts tell me. They all liked him more than Caleb Williams, or at least it sounded like they did. And now he's clearly playing much better than Caleb Williams is. So I don't know. I mean, that's good enough for me. And maybe Caleb Williams will end up being a better player than Jaden Daniels. But you guys tell me. I mean, who would you take at this point between those two? And I know it's a small thing, but I would have probably taken Daniels just by way of, based on what everybody said. But based on what I've seen so far, I'm definitely taking Jaden Daniels if I could pick either guy right now.
Yeah, I think you'd have a hard time finding anybody to give you a different answer at this point. You know, there were questions already, though, with Caleb Williams in the situation. On one hand, we all acknowledged, hey, he's got more weapons than any other rookie quarterback and maybe in NFL history. But at the same time, the coaching staff and OC questions, and I think 3 weeks in, you're starting to see why people were concerned about the offensive coordinator there.
Yes, I think there's no question about it. Right now, it's early, and I think Caleb Williams showed more in this last game, sort of in garbage time, than Bryce Young really ever did last year for the Panthers, but there's certainly some similarities between those two situations, for sure.
All right, Ross, appreciate it, man. We'll check in next week.
Awesome. Sounds good to see you guys.
There you go. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. He's presented by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day, be delicious. Good stuff from him.
Yeah, we got added by our Aussie friend on Twitter. It said, champagne problems. Who knew that Ross Tucker was a Swiftie?
He is.
If you haven't listened to Ross Tucker on the show before, he has actually known the Swift family forever. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kind of tight with her dad, and they have known each other for a long time. They grew up in the same town. Ross Tucker's absolutely a Swiftie. He's an OG Swiftie, maybe, even for Ross Tucker.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Who knew, right? I mean, look, sometimes you surprise yourself. But I think he made good points on the Chiefs, for one, because calling it champagne problems is fair. Right now, I think you'd actually be kind of foolish to try to convince me that the Chiefs are playing good football. They're not. They're not playing good football. Some of the things they're doing are working. Some of the things they're doing are good. But are they collectively playing good football? No. Are they 3-0 despite that? Yeah. So am I that worried? Not particularly. Because the champagne problems of we can't get Kelsey involved, or the defense is struggling against tight ends, or we're still trying to figure out the offensive line, they're doing that while winning, which makes forgiving the mistakes a lot easier. If they were 2-1, 1-2, or they go to lose 3 of their next 4 games, we can probably revisit some of these things that have been cropping up. But if they just figure out a way to slowly get better, am I going to care that in week 2, Travis Kelce only had 13 yards? Nah, I'll figure it out.
All right, let's get to it.
Trash of the day.
All right, this one's local. You guys probably seen in the news anyway that there's been a lot of talk about the Plaza here. There may be some renovations.
Yeah.
A new company owns it. Some exciting things maybe in the works for the Plaza. This doesn't have to do with the changes, but it's the story. I didn't know this was possible at this store, I guess is what I'm saying. So, unfortunately, there's a story of a Kansas City, Missouri woman who faces charges in connection to allegedly stealing nearly $26,000 worth of candles.
How much?
From Bath and Body Works.
In fairness, candles are kind of expensive.
They are expensive.
I like having candles around the house. They're not cheap.
How many candles?
You get like a nice woodwick candle, man. Look, I mean, that thing's going to run you $40-$50.
Back when I could actually smell, I would get candles. Now there's no point in me actually spending any money on candles anymore. It is a complete waste of money for me at this point.
You said $25,000?
$26,000. One count of felony, stealing more than $25,000 worth of goods. According to court documents, she stole... Oh, here's my answer. I'm sorry. She stole roughly 1,000 candles between April 22nd and September 2024.
Was she reselling?
I was gonna say they're about $20, normally $22.
I mean, she had to have tried.
Yeah, because
right?
Because be honest, that place has worse candles. A high quality candle costs you more than that. A lot of places.
So here's what she did. She absolutely was trying to allegedly sell them. She told police detectives that she would sell the stolen goods on Facebook Marketplace or, quote, on the street for half
the street. Oh, dude, if you were just walking down
she
the street
around with a bag.
And somebody's, hey, man, I got this ginger and clove candle. $10. You want it? Come on, $10 for a candle. You buying?
Yeah, so it, for half of the sticker price.
Mm-hmm.
For half the sticker price.
There are places that you can go now and get Bath & Body Works candles that, like, don't exist anymore for, like, $50. Like, they're...
That person stole it.
They're very expensive.
That person stole it, if that's the case.
Mm.
He might be buying them
for
somebody
that
allegedly
stole. My wife used to work at Bath & Body Works, and she said that's a thing where, because scents don't always come back again. They'll just hang on to them and then they'll sell them for more.
Come back again. I swear to God, there are people who claim, at least, I don't know if this is one of those, like, lie side hustles, who claim they make six figures a year buying up Legos and just sitting on them in a secular thing for like 2 years, because Lego releases a bunch of things that never get released again, right? Like the candles, where if you just sit on it for 2 years, they increase in value due to the fact that they have now come out of circulation.
I believe it more on like something like Legos, or certainly you were talking about baseball cards, stuff like that, you know, appreciates or whatever. The candle thing is wild.
Candles are appreciating?
If people like that scent enough, they're willing to spend $50 maybe
for
the
candle. I hear
you,
but what's crazy to me on that is, like, eventually, though, the candle, like, it's not lasting forever. You know what I mean?
Also, there are a million candles. Can I not find one that is close in scent?
Like, the Lego, you can enjoy that for the rest of your life, theoretically. A baseball card, you could pass that down to your grandkids, grandkids, grandkids. Like, a candle, at some point...
We'll go away.
Goes away. I mean,
although I've got a candle that's getting ready to burn out, I'm just going to go get it refilled. I like the container it's in.
Right, but
it'll be a different scent.
But in this scenario, we're talking about keeping the same scent.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better hope the scent's still around, Kerry.
Nah, it'll be a different scent.
Oh, yes. Okay. Someone was wondering, why do we do Trash of the Day? On Wednesday's Trash of the Day is going to be a little earlier because we've got some press conferences in the 11 o'clock hour. So, yeah, on Wednesday's Trash of the Day is around this time. Normally, you're correct. Appreciate you recognizing that it's a different time. That means you listen a lot.
We love your dedication.
11:20 normally, but a little earlier today. All right, guys, up next, quick one. That was a quick 10 o'clock hour, to say the least. Up next, we get to the 11 o'clock hour. Let's talk more about Travis Kelce. You heard Ross Tucker mention him. How about hearing from Travis Kelce himself, his latest comments on his podcast, and also why everyone is talking about Matt Quatrero? We'll explain that next.